Well, last week we did not have a shiur, Parshas Miketz, but Yosef and the brothers, and indeed Jewish history, did not wait for us. And much has happened since then. The brothers have come down and been exposed to all manners of trauma through this Egyptian ruler, and things are coming to a head. As of last week, the cup was missing. It was found in the sack of Binyamin. And Yosef says, whoever sack the cup was found, he shall stay as a servant to me. The rest of you may go home. Alulis shalom el avichem. Go up to your father in peace, which of course is the last thing that's possible for them to do. And Yehuda takes matters in hand, the beginning of Parshas Vayigash. Elav Yehuda Vayomer bi Adoni. He makes his plea for Binyamin, offering to stay in his stead. Ad kedei kach. And of course, there's much to say about the content and the ideas and arguments that Yehuda puts forward, but I'd like to direct our attention to perhaps a less common way of looking at the opening pasuk, the opening words of Parshas Vayigash. And it will be under the auspices of the Vilna Gaon, and we'll begin far and away. There is a Gemara in Maseches Bava Basra in the first perek, Daf Tes and Yud and Yud Aleph. They deal with matters of Tzedaka. A lot of the halachas of Tzedaka are actually mentioned there. And as is often the case, the Gemara flows freely between halachic rulings and anecdotes and episodes and events, and we can learn from all of them. Sometimes we can learn more from an episode than you can from a halachic ruling. In any event, the Gemara tells of one of the rabbis of the Talmud, Rav Papa, I believe. He was ascending a ladder, and one of the rungs broke in the ladder, laying him at risk to falling in great danger. So he narrowly escapes the fall, but as is often the case, when something like that happens, it's in place to make what's called a cheshbon nefesh, to begin to ask himself, have I been remiss in something? Am I okay with regards to my conduct? I mean, this is the way how great people conduct themselves. Lesser people find it impossible to consider the notion that they might be remiss in anything, but the greater you get, the more open you are to that possibility. So one of his colleagues, Rabbi Hananya ben Agil, I believe he was, so he says, could it be that a poor person came to you for tzedakah, and you were somehow not as active or proactive as you should have been in terms of taking care of him? In other words, perhaps in the area of tzedakah, there's something missing. Well, okay, Rav Papa accepts the suggestion and begins to think, and in the end he indeed comes up with some episode that had happened there. Some poor person came to him, he made him wait or whatever, he wasn't as active as he should have been, and he sought to make things right. The question, of course, is, of all the commandments and of all the areas of halacha, and Rabbi Hanina ben Agil, he doesn't know. It's just a suggestion. It sounds like what they'd call a shot in the dark. It could be anything. But somehow, he intuited that if something like this happened to our papa, it must be in the area of tzedakah. And the question is, why? There's many mitzvahs. Manishtana ha-mitzvah zos mikol ha-mitzvahs, that if a rung breaks, it could be due to this. And there is a classic comment, which is cited in the name of the Vilna Gaon. And it really gives us, I would say, a new insight, a new appreciation into the area of Torah which we call Tami HaMikra. Tami HaMikra, which is either called the cantillation notes, or the trop, or the neginos, which are the signs and symbols which accompany the words of the Chumash, which tell us how to lay and how to intone. And we already see, and it's worth mentioning, that sometimes a certain tam, it's not just to tell you how to sing it, but it gives you a sense of the episode itself. And in fact, the Rashbash, who is from one of the Rishonim, he makes a comment of this nature with regards to Paro's meeting with Yaakov. So Yaakov meets Paro, and Paro asks him the most probably politically incorrect question that you could ask. He looks at him and says, "Kama yemei shnechaya? How old are you?" That's got to be up there with how much money do you make, and so on and so forth. So what is it? But clearly, there's something about Yaakov. He looks unbelievably old. I mean, the years have taken their toll, and Paro just, he can't contain himself. And he has to ask, I mean, how old are you? No one is that old, as you look, until Yaakov says, "I'm not that old, I've had a difficult life," with all that goes with that. But what's interesting is, if you look at the pasuk there, when he says, "Kama yemei shnei chayecha," so on the word kama, there's a significant cantillation. It's called the zakef godol, in fact. And one pauses almost at that stage. And it kind of has this emphasis, and it's there because that's the way Paro asked the question. In other words, kama, how old are you in that way? It wasn't a casual question. How is your journey? How's your accommodations? What's your age? But rather, you see from the Tamiya Mikra that he it's so emphatic because he can't contain himself. That's already from Rishonim. The Vilna Gaon takes this idea to an entirely new plane. And he states that the mitzvah of tzedakah is mentioned in Parshas Re'eh. It's one of the summer parshas, Parshas Re'eh. And there it says, "Ki pasoach tiftach es yotcha l'achicha l'aniyecha," you should surely open your hand to your brother, to the poor person. Says the Vilna Gaon, if you look at the words pasoach tiftach, you shall open your hand, and they are the words which command the mitzvah of tzedakah, so you will see that the tamim underneath them, it's the Z shape and then the downward with the dot, which is known as Darga Tavir. Darga Tavir, everyone knows, the Darga wavers and Tavir goes down. And those are the ta'amim that accompany the words Pasoach Tiftach. Well, every ta'am has a name, and the names themselves have meanings. And what Darga means is a level or a step. And what Tavir means in Aramaic is broken. From Hebrew to Aramaic, a shin becomes a tuf often. Dva'asa Torah is a shore, it's an ox that we say in Chag Gadya. So Darga Tavir is a broken step. And that, says the Vilna Gaon in this classic comment, is how Rav Chanina ben Agil was able to intuit, if a step was broken, if there's been a Darga Tavir, it's probably because of Pasoach Tiftach, of the mitzvah of tzedakah. And this is an idea which is echoed a number of times in the writings of the Vilna Gaon. One more example off location before we get back to where we are. But it illuminates the whole concept of Tamiya Mikra. Again, they're not just how to lane or how the Balkuri should have laned and so on and so forth. Quite soon, we'll be getting to, and we're already in the pre-shadow of the Bris Ben Abisari, of the covenant between the pieces. And there, Avram is told, Yadoa Teda, Ger Yazaracha Be'eretz Lahem, that your descendants will be strangers in a land which is not theirs. And the question is, of course, in the event we were in Mitzrayim, if you make the Cheshbon, for 210 years. That's not 400 years. What about the missing 190 years? What are we to say about them? And the first to speak about this among the classic Rishonim, and many people talk in as many approaches, Rashi says, very simply, the Pasuk never said you're going to be in Egypt for 400 years. It says you're going to be strangers in a land which is not yours. And that actually can begin even in Eretz Yisrael, as Yitzhak Avram moves to the land of Plishtim, a little bit off. Yitzhak is already begins his life there. And Therefore, between from the birth of Yitzchak to Yetzias Mitzrayim is actually 400 years. So if you're able, if you're prepared to expand, which Rashi is, the concept of Eretz Lo Lahem, it can begin in Israel. It will culminate in the land of Egypt, but between them there's 400 years. That's how Rashi accounts. Others say very simply that perhaps the projected time is 400 years, but in the event, and there's evidence in the Medrash to this effect, the Jewish people simply were not able to go the distance. They were not able to stay there for 400 years. We see that they were in dire situation, both physically and spiritually. Famous statement of the Zohar, they were on the 49th level of Tumah. That's as low as it gets if there's ever going to be a comeback. According to that approach, indeed, the 400 years were not served. They had to come out in the middle. And according to that approach, a corollary of that is that perhaps the other 190 years needed to be made up in subsequent exiles, which is also a possibility. However, an approach which is taken by many Mefarshim is that actually the Egyptians were, the intensity of the subjugation was such that it actually compressed 400 years of difficulty and of enslavement into the 210. So qualitatively, you had 400 years, where quantitatively, you had 210. Double time, they worked them overtime and twice as hard, and therefore you had, and of course only Hashem can make a cheshbon like that. And that's why they say, when it comes to the Haggadah, we say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Chisheva Saketz, he calculated the end. But the word Ketz itself has a gematria of 190. Those are the 190 missing years that Hashem calculated and assessed that they were already present in the 210. Where do we see the Torah refer to the difficulty? I mean, what are the words that really sum it all up and encapsulate it? Are the words in the beginning of Parshas Shemos, they embittered their lives. I mean, that says it all. And says the Vilna Gaon, if you look at the words and again consult the Tami HaMikra, they're the things that we normally screen out or filter out as we've got our hands full with the words themselves. But if you look at the Tami HaMikra, you'll see there are two crescents upwards facing each other. And that Tam is known as Kadma Ba'azla. And once again, Kadma Ba'azla has a meaning. Kadma means before, and Azla means to go. In other words, Kadma Ba'azla means to go before, because the Jewish people actually left Mitzrayim before the time. Why Kadma Ba'azla? Because of the words underneath of Vayumararu Esrayehem, the amount of bitterness that was there, the intensity of the enslavement and subjugation. Vayumar Esrayehem led to Kadma Ba'azla. And for those who are up for another round of what that might mean, post-Vilna Gaon commentators note that the words Kadma Ba'azla themselves have a gematria of 190. So that means that it's now within a gematria within the Ta'amim. In other words, the words state they embittered their lives. The Ta'amim say that's where they went out early, and the gematria of the Ta'amim tell you just how early they left, 190 years early. Okay, what does all this have to do with Parshas Vayigash? Yehuda is waiting patiently for us, or impatiently, and what do we see here? Well, Vayigash Elav Yehuda, Vayomer Biaduni, Yehuda, he approaches Yosef, he's the one that makes the plea for Binyamin. And the question, of course, is why Yehuda? If we would ask from fresh. And the background to the question is that Yehuda is not the oldest, he's the fourth born. So why does he come forward out of all the brothers? Now the answer, of course, we know from last week's Parsha. He took Achrayus. He took responsibility for Binyamin. So much so, he put everything at stake. He says to Yaakov the well-known words of the Pasuk, Im lo havi Yosef lefanecha, v'tzaktiv lefanecha, if I don't bring him back to you, v'chatasi lecha kol hayomim. And he says that to Yosef here, I'll be in a state of sin all the days. How many days is all the days? Says the Gemara, and Rashi cites it. All time. This world, the next world, he's forfeiting potentially everything. if he doesn't bring Binyamin back. Even as Chelek in Olam Haba, if a person can do that, and apparently you can. So, if we look carefully at the first six words of Parshas Vayigash, and look at the Ta'amim, we will see something very interesting. The first two Ta'amim, Vayigash Elav, once again, have those crescents, which we identified as Kadma Va'azla. Okay. The word Yehuda has a dot on top, or a diamond, whatever you'll call it, and that dot on top is called a Revi'i. Kadma Va'azla Revi'i. What's left? The squiggles, if you pardon the non-scientific terminology, on the word Vayomer is called Zarka. And B has a perpendicular line underneath, called a Munach. And finally, the three dots on top of Adoni, they're upside down for us, but they're called a Segel, just as we have a Segel, those three dots. Says the Vilna Gaon, put it all together, and what do you have? That accompanying the word which described Yehuda going forward and making his plea to Yosef are the very question and answer that we have been discussing. Namely, it begins, Vayigash Elav Yehuda, Yehuda goes forward. And the Ta'amim raise the question, Kadma Va'azla Revi. Yehuda is the Revi, he's the fourth son. But he's Kadma Va'azla, he's going forward before anyone else. Why? And to the question that's raised by the first three Ta'amim, we have an answer in the form of the second three Ta'amim. Zarka Munach Segel. Because Yehuda was potentially losing everything if he doesn't bring Binyamin back. Zarka, he's throwing away. And what is he throwing away? Munach Segel. The Segel, the Segula, the treasure, which is Munach, which is reserved for Tzadikim in Olam Haba, that stands to be thrown away by him. And because he's Zarka Munach Segel, that's why Kadma Va'azla Revi. So as we can appreciate, it's a different type of signals intelligence than we might be normally looking for. And many Mefarshim take this idea of the Vilna Gaon and apply it in different situations, in different psukim. But in any case, these are the classics as found in the sources that cite the Vilna Gaon himself. So that's with regards to the opening of Vayigash. What does Yehuda say? So I think it's very interesting to note what he says in Pasuk Kaf. You asked, or he says to Yosef, or this Egyptian ruler, you asked, do we have a father, do we have a brother? And we said, Vanomer el Adoni. We said to you, to our master, Yishlano avzakem, we have an elderly father, V'yelet zakunim katan. And a child of his old age. Vachiv Meis, his brother's dead. Originally they said his brother's missing, now they said the brother's dead. It might be better if he's, for these purposes, if he's dead than missing. And only Binyamin is left. And just before we get to further matters, I think it's worthwhile noting something very interesting. What does the word Yelet Zakunim mean here? Yelet Zakunim, the child of his old age. And why is he called that? This is a reference to Binyamin. Why is he called that? Because he's the child of Yaakov's old age. Why is this so significant? Binyamin is not the first person in the Torah to be called the child of someone's old age, and he's not the first person to be called the child of Yaakov's old age. As we know, Parshas Vayeshev begins with Yaakov favoring Yosef, the Yisrael, Ahavis Yosef mikol banav. And why does he love Yosef more? Ki ben zikunim hulo. Because he was the child of his old age. Okay. What does that mean? Rashi gives a couple of perushim. The first explanation is kipshuta. Ben zikunim. Sheno ladlo le'esik noso. He was born when Yaakov was old. Pshuta. But then, Rashi goes on to give a second explanation, which is very different. The second explanation, says Rashi, is that Yosef was a wise son. It's actually more descriptive of Yosef himself, Ben Zikunim, than it is about how old Yaakov was. Ben Zikunim, and in fact, that's Unkelus' translation. Ben Zukunim, says Unklus, Bar Chakim, a wise son. And the question that many Mefarshim ask and should ask, and we always try to ask, if Rashi gives firstly the Pshat, and then gives a second explanation, what would move Rashi to present anything beyond the Pshat? It seems like it couldn't be simpler. Ben Zukunim, son of his old age, and that's that. Why? What would move Rashi to feel that he should present another explanation to supplement or to somehow complete the picture? Well, some suggest very practically that Yosef wasn't the youngest of the children. Binyamin was. So why is Yosef called the Ben Zukunim if it's about how old Yaakov was when Yosef was born? Aside from which, Yaakov wasn't young when any of the others were born. All 12 brothers are divided by, the first 11 are really clustered together. I mean, there's four mothers and they're having children roughly at the same time. And between 6 or 7 years, they were all born. So how old is he when Yosef was born? However it is, the 91 or 90 whatever. Okay, and how old is he when Reuben is born? 86? So in other words, Reuben is born, I don't think anyone looked at Yaakov and said, oh, he's yet young. Relatively speaking, between those that corridor of years, there really isn't such a difference. They're all Ben Zukunims, one could say. And if you have to choose one of them, so it should be Binyamin. So how does Yosef become? And that may be it. These are very simple sounding and practical considerations, but maybe this is why Rashi said maybe there's more to Ben Zukunim than how old Yaakov was. Maybe it's Yosef's wisdom. I haven't seen anyone suggest the following, but I wonder whether one could say, again, very simply, that what moves Rashi to give the second explanation there is the pasuk here in Parshas Vayigash. Let's ask a simple question. How does one say the son of one's old age, a son of his old age? Yosef is called Ben Zukunim. But here, Yehuda says that Binyamin is Yelet Zukunim. What's the difference between Ben Zukunim and Yelet Zukunim? That's a pshat question. And presumably, Yelet Zukunim, I mean, Yelet doesn't mean a child. I mean, Binyamin wasn't a child at that time. Yelet means nolad, born in his old age. Once we understand that Yelet Zukunim seems to be the more correct way to say born of his old age, so go back to the word Ben Zukunim, and what could Ben mean in addition to how old Yaakov was? The word Ben has another meaning. Ben doesn't just mean child of parent-wise. Ben is often a characterization of someone, like you would say Ben Bilial, or Ben Moves, or Ben this, or Ben that, B'nai Bris. And therefore, it could be very simply that when Rashi sees Ben Zukunim and says more than one explanation, it's because if it's just the first explanation, it should have said Yelet Zukunim, as it does here. And that's why Rashi says Ben Zukunim sounds like it's also about Yosef, characterizing him. He was wise, Bar Chakim. And what's interesting is, Unkelus himself translates the two differently. As we've seen, Unkelus translates Ben Zukunim as Bar Chakim, he was a wise son. Whereas here, if you look at Unkelus on Yelet Zukunim, he says Bar Sivtin, the son of his old age. So why did Unkelus change from one to the other? And Unkelus is where it all started. Because Yelet Zukunim must mean born in his old age. But that's why Ben Zukunim perhaps means something else. Perhaps it's about Yosef himself, how wise he was. So that, I'd be delighted if someone else has said that further, but I think this may well be the key to that Rashi. And of course, it's a good reminder for us that sometimes you never know if the background to what's happening is right in front of you. It could be that you need to broaden a little bit your vision, and it could come from another parsha and so on and so forth. I will say, just in conclusion, because we are just coming off of Hanukkah, there is a classic comment of the Rokeach. Rokeach is one of the great Rishonim, the German Rishonim, Rabbi Elazar Rokeach. And he addresses the fact that the word Zukunim, if you look in earlier on, is written without a vav. Zikunim. One could say that it should be Zayin Kuf Vavnun Zikunim, but it's written without a Vav. Chaser, what's called. Okay, what does that mean? Okay, it can be. But we note that the parshas of Yosef are always read at the time of Hanukkah, or maybe more correctly, Hanukkah always falls at the time that we read the parshas of Yosef. The two somehow are very much connected. You can't get to Hanukkah without having had Vayeshev, and you're going to have Miketz in the middle, and then lead out into Vayigash. Is there any connection between Yosef and Hanukkah? From a certain point of view, Yosef really is the Hanukkah story, in the sense that Yosef, he is the Torah personality. He's put into a completely alien environment, antithetical and antagonistic to everything that he holds to be true, ideally and morally, and he needs to fight. And it's Rabin Biyad Ma'atim. It's one person against the whole empire, really, in terms of staying true to his beliefs, etc., and he's prepared to fight for it. I mean, Yosef's story is, in that respect, a forerunner of the Hanukkah story. Because it's about his unwillingness to betray the Torah that he holds dear for any foreign ideology. Of course, he's Bar Chakim, he's Ben Zikunim. He holds the Torah in the family. The item, which we know, which is so associated in so many ways with Hanukkah, is the menorah. Light the menorah, and so on and so forth. And the menorah itself is a symbol of Torah. Ki ner mitzvah v'Torah or. What do we know about the menorah? Seven branches in the Mishkan. How is that referred to? What are branches in Hebrew? Konim. And how many are there? Shiva konim. Says the Rokeach, look at the word ben zikunim. It's written without a vav. The word zikunim without a vav is Zion konim. Seven branches. Because that is already Yosef as a person embodying that which is expressed by the object called the menorah of Shiva Konim. So says the Rokeach. So we see this again, many, many layers from Pshat and onwards. What comes out from Yelet Zikunim, as you go further in the Torah, sometimes you need to go backwards and re-examine certain things. Ben Zikunim and Yelet Zikunim. Okay, well, things reach what appeared to be a breaking point for Yosef. And that is in the beginning of Perek Memhe. And I believe it's especially important to consult and consider this pasuk carefully, because it's a good example of a pasuk that is very easy to summarize in our words and miss something out. Because we naturally assume that the pasuk is saying what we think it would be saying, and sometimes we forget to check what it actually is saying. After Yehuda has made his plea on behalf of Binyamin, so then what happens? Yosef reveals his identity to the brothers. And why does he reveal his identity at this moment? So the answer for us would be, because of what Yehuda has said, and it's too much, and it gets to him, and he can't take it anymore. He can't control himself anymore. He can't keep up the pretense. For whatever reason he had the pretense in the first place, he can't keep it up anymore. As the pasuk says, lo yachol Yosef litapek. He couldn't contain things anymore. And that's the point where he says, he's Yosef. There's just one problem. And that is, the pasuk doesn't say that. In other words, we perhaps selectively recall part of the pasuk, but then we miss the full message. Because the pasuk doesn't say, v'lo yachol Yosef lisapek. He couldn't control himself. It says, v'lo yachol Yosef lisapek, l'chol hanitzavim alav. Relative to all those who were standing by him, standing around him, which is not the brothers. Doesn't say l'kol echav. I mean, it's relative to all those who were standing. Apparently, it's the Egyptians. Apparently, it's his entourage. I mean, he's not there by himself. And that's now all one phrase. So you can't cut half the phrase and turn it into the whole thing. The pasuk doesn't say he couldn't control himself. He's, with all of the people around him. But what is the meaning? What is the meaning of this phrase? Now that we have all the words actually in front of us, and here Rashi comments, and Rashi says, again, he quotes the whole phrase, "Lo yachol Yosef lisapek lechol anitzavim." What does it mean? Lo haya yachol lisbol sheyu mitzrayim nitzavim alav. He couldn't bear the fact that Mitzrayim would be there when he's about to tell his brothers who he is. In other words, that was unbearable for him. The time has come for him to tell the brothers. But he doesn't want the Mitzrayim there, because it's a terrible shame, it's a terrible busha for them. He doesn't want to put his brothers through that trauma of having other onlookers see them in their moment of shame. That's how Rashi explains the word v'leyachol Yosef lehisapek, which is interesting, because according to Rashi, the word lehisapek is synonymous with lisbol. He couldn't bear the thought. So we have no notion from Rashi as to why he chose this moment. The pasuk doesn't tell us why he chose this moment. What changed? The time had come, as far as Rashi is concerned. And if the time has come, he doesn't want the Egyptians to be there, because v'leyachol lehisapek lechol anitzavim alav. He doesn't want them there. But this is, as Mefarshim point out, Rishonim, that's a bit of an unusual, if one could say, understanding of the word litapek. We normally understand litapek as to control oneself. Who is the other person who's famous? Well, exercising this, it's Haman, Vayisapak Haman. That's an unlikely association, but it's a rare word. So litapek means to get oneself under control. So, but what does that mean? He couldn't get himself under control. L'chol hanitzavim alav. So certain Rishonim explained, Ibn Ezra, and in fact the Rambam's son, Rabbeinu Avram, he quotes his grandfather, Rabbeinu Maimon. He brings a lot from his father, and, or occasionally from his father and from his grandfather, that what it means is that here's Yosef. He's in the middle of a business day, really. Every day is busy for Yosef, and the brothers are here, but others are there. There's a lot of business to attend to. He's running the country, which means he doesn't want other people to be there. But the question is, when will they leave? They'll leave at the end of the business day, which is a long time away. And the point of the pasuk is, lo yachol Yosef. Yosef couldn't contain himself once the time has come to reveal his identity to the brothers. He can't wait now. 6, 7, 8 hours until the business day is done and everyone naturally leaves, because he needs to tell them now. That's the meaning of Le'chol Yosef Lisapek Le'chol Nitzavim Alav. He couldn't contain his impatience with everyone being here, and they're not going to leave by themselves for another long while, and that's why he calls for them all to leave, because the time has come. Probably the most, I would say, startling explanation of these words, again, lo yachol Yosef lisapek lechol hanitzavim alav, comes from Ramban, and it's very interesting to consider, just from so many angles, when we consider how did this look, what did the relevant people make of all of this? In other words, we have all knowledge, because we're given the whole story. So we know that it's really Yosef, and we know that what's happening, whether we understand it, is another question, but we know that it's Yosef, and we take that in understanding. Yosef knows that he's Yosef, obviously. The brothers don't know anything. So what do they make all of this? One can only imagine. But says Ramban, the brothers are not the only ones present. They're not the only ones who are experiencing this. Because as we've seen, Yosef has an entourage. He has people there. And you have to imagine, says Ramban, that all of these people, they're in a sense as confounded as the brothers are. One never stops to think, what did the Egyptian onlooker make of all of this? He sees their leader, who normally is rational and is incredibly organizational and has basically saved the country, and all of a sudden these 10 people come and no one can explain what's happening with him. He's accusing them of being spies with clearly not really much of a basis. If you're accused of being a spy, you can't get out of it. But because if you try and explain yourself, it just makes you a better spy. But for those who are from the side who know that this doesn't, they can't account for it. And moreover, they are his entourage in the sense that they will discuss things with him and he will discuss things with them, and no one can make any sense of how he's been acting. As soon as these people come, he becomes completely irrational. And everybody hears Binyamin's plea. And you have all these Egyptian onlookers from the side, they're just melting. And they can't take it anymore. And they can't understand why Yosef is treating them this way. And they begin to apply pressure to Yosef, as if to say, you know, with all due respect, Tzofnas Paneach, but let him go, or do something. They can't take that Yosef is just continuing to somehow single this group out for trauma and torment. And in the end, Yosef was not able to sustain the pressure that came from the outside. It was too much because they don't know what's going on and he can't explain it to them, but then he's acting inexplicably and they can't take it anymore, and then he can't take it anymore. And that's how the Ramban explains, V'lo yochol Yosef lesapek l'chol anitzavim ala. He wasn't able to withstand the pressure from coming from all of those who were standing by him, who were just, they were platzing, because they didn't know what's happening. But they can't, they will expire before anyone else with. Well, and incredible explanation of Ramban. Again, whatever explanation one takes, Hatzat HaShovesh Shebahem, what is true for all of them, is that you haven't done justice to the verse if you leave out the second half of the phrase. That's really the so however one understands the Chodin Savimala, Rashi or Ibn Ezra or Ramban, but you can't cut a phrase in half and then hope to have done justice to it, as we say. So finally, it's Yosef, it's really him, and they begin to reconcile. It's a long process. The brothers are stunned, and as we quote often from Mefarshim, they're stunned not only because it's finally Yosef. They're stunned because they don't even know if it's Yosef. Even when he says he's Yosef, they don't know that that's true, because nothing else he said so far has brought them any nachas. He seems to be tormenting them for some reason. So maybe he's now saying he's Yosef. It could be that he met Yosef. It could be that he knows about him, and this is just another... Maybe he's taking revenge on Yosef's behalf. Anything's possible. So by this stage, they don't know what to say. And he almost needs now to convince them that he's Yosef. I mean, that's the state that things had reached. But in the end, he really is Yosef. And that takes a while. Pasuk, let's have a look at Pasuk Kaf Beis. He gives them changes of clothing. L'chulam nosan la'ish chalifa somalos. For each he gave a change of clothing. Ulu Binyamin nosan shlosh mios kesev chamesh chalifa somalos. He gave him 300 shekels of silver and 300 silver coins. The chamesh chalifa somalos, and 5 changes of clothing. There is an amazing section in the Gemara. The Gemara is quite shocked, seemingly, by what's happening here. And the Gemara expresses itself. This is in Maseches Megillah on Daf Tet Zayin. And the Gemara, because what's happening? He's reconciled, and he gives them all something, and then for Binyamin he gives 5 times that amount. And the Gemara is upset and asks the question, I mean, how can he do this? And the background to the question is, he is just now recovered from, or just coming out of 22 years after everything that came because he was favored from all the other brothers. And no sooner has that happened than he begins to favor one of the brothers. Now one could say maybe his relationship with Binyamin is different, because they're the only two from the mother. Maybe Yaakov should not have favored one of them from all bit, but maybe Yosef can be understood. But the Gemara, nonetheless, it seems ill-advised, to say the least. The least appropriate thing that one could imagine, they're all together again, and then he favors one of them. That's the question. And the Gemara quotes a teaching that Yaakov favoring Yosef was somehow a catalyst for everything snowballing down to Mitzrayim, although to a degree it would have happened anyway, but it reflects negatively on anything that allowed it to happen. That's the Gemara's question. And to which the Gemara replies, Remez Romazlo. He's giving an allusion to Binyamin. What's the allusion? What's the hint? What's the portent? That in the future, one of Binyamin's own descendants will also emerge from the royal palace with 5 special garments. And that, of course, and this is why it's in Maseches Megillah, that refers to Mordechai. Mordechai Ishimini, from the tribe of Binyamin, as the pasuk says, U'Mordechai Yatzam Rechnei HaMelech, Be'Gush Malchus, Tcheles Vachor, Bateretz Butzva Agaman, and so on and so forth. And interestingly, that pasuk is one of the 4 psukim that we read out loud. The whole congregation reads it out loud. Even though of the 4 that we read out loud, it's perhaps the least likely to be read out loud. You know, the first is introduces Mordechai, Ish Yehudi. Okay, that's a big introduction. La Yehudi Moisa Uruva Simcha. I mean, that everyone should say. And the final pasuk is the final pasuk. But this one, Mordechai Yeltsin, he left the palace with the 5 changes of clothing. I mean, how does that rate amongst these 4 that everyone says out loud? What are you meant to feel when you say that? I mean, but presumably the reason why is because this really is catching the original energy that you have in Chumash Bereishis of Binyamin. To the extent that this is the link, you have Maisa Ovis, you could almost say, for what's happening, is reflected in Binyamin having these 5 changes of clothing. So when Mordechai leaves with those 5 special garments, it is a big event. The question still remains: why is this the link? But it is. But the Vilna Gaon again asked an interesting shaila. What was the Gemara's question? You're favoring one of the brothers. That could lead to jealousy. And what's the answer? There's an allusion to future times. The problem is that allusions exist in the world of remez. Jealousy exists in the world of pshat. So if there's an issue here that might lead to bad feeling, a remez might not remedy the situation. They may still remain jealous, al derech hapshat, and your remez didn't help. Is everyone in on this? Does everyone understand that something else is happening here? There's an illusion for the future, and it's all taken on understanding? Perhaps. It is possible, says the Vilna Gaon, that the clothing that Yosef gave to Binyamin was of lesser quality, so that in the end, like 5 of Binyamin's were like one of theirs. It could be. We don't know. It is interesting, though, that may actually be borne out by the pasuk itself. If we have a look, as again pointed out by post Vilna Gaon Meforshim, pasuk Kafbeis, Luchulam Nosan Leish Chalifos Somalos. To each of them, he gave a change of clothing, and he gave a change of clothing, by the way, not just as a present. In the end of Parshas Miketz, they tore their clothing. The pasuk says, "Vayikrusim Losom." They need new clothes. So he gave each of them Chalifos Somalos. Ulu Binyamin, he gave Shlosh Mios Kesef, Bechamesh Chalifo Somalos, 5 changes of clothing. Once again, if we look closely, you could never know this by listening to the Kriya Satora. But if you look at the words, you'll see that their changes of clothing, when it says Chalifo Somalos, the word Chalifos is written Male, with a Vav. When it comes to Binyamin, it says Chamesh Chalifo Somalos, Chalifos is written Choser, without a Vav. But what's the difference between Chalifos with a Vav or without a Vav? And some suggest that this really is support for what the Vilna Gaon is saying. Yosef wants to have an allusion to these 5 changes of clothing, but he doesn't want to arouse jealousy, so he gives lower quality. And therefore, what he gave to them was male, in the sense of higher quality. What he gave to Binyamin was chaser, lower quality. That's why it's written chaser, chalifos semanos. Okay. Interestingly, Reb Chaim Berlin, the son of the Netziv, Reb Chaim Berlin, who was the rabbi in Moscow, and then his later years here in Yerushalayim, he also discusses the implications of chalifos with a vav and without a vav. Normally, he gives, one could say, almost a disarmingly practical or simple answer, and those are also equally valid. Whenever a word is written without a vav, it has a connotation of singular, because without a vav, it's really spelled as the singular, meaning similar. The word luchos, for example, shnei luchos is written without a vav, because they were identical. Luchos, right, equal in size, so Rashi says. So what's the difference between the chalifos he gave to the brothers and the chalifos he gave to Binyamin? The chalifos he gave to the brothers were of different sizes, because they're for 10 different people. And therefore, they're different from each other in that way. So it's written chalifos with a vav, denoting different types. But for Binyamin, there are 5, but they're all for him. So they're all the same. And therefore, it's written chalifos without a vav, because they're similar to each other in that way. That's a classic comment of the of Reb Chaim Berlin. What's very interesting is, the Gemara got very, as we express it, upset with the fact, seemingly, that Yosef is giving 5 garments to the brothers, and he only gave one, pardon me, to Binyamin, and only 1 garment to each to the other brothers, and the Gemara accounts for it. But there's what one could call an elephant in the room in this pasuk, because he not only did he give Binyamin 5 changes of clothing, he gave him shlosh meos kesef, he gave him 300 silver coins. And what's that a remez to? And the Gemara doesn't even talk about it. But if the issue is giving Binyamin more than he gave them, so it's amazing. Not only do we not readily understand how it could be, the Gemara doesn't even raise it as an issue. So what's with the 300 coins? So here, Rishonim, again the Rokeach and others, explain that actually the 300 coins was no cause for jealousy, because those were coins that actually Binyamin deserved, and the brothers deserved to forfeit. How so? The halacha states that if a person sells his eved, or sells someone as an eved to a non-Jewish or Gentile society, he has to redeem him. And he has to redeem it and be prepared to redeem him even to 10 times his value. It's a terribly grave thing to do. He's got to redress it and get it back. What's the value of an eved? Well, we know from Parshas Mishpatim, it's valued as shloshim shek, shloshim shkolim, 30 silver coins. Each of the brothers should have been prepared to pay 300 coins, 10 times the value, to get Yosef back, and no one did. Now, Yosef was mochel them, but effectively he's credited each of them with 300 coins. Binyamin was not in the sale. And therefore, everyone gets mechila, but Binyamin actually gets the coins themselves. That's what's behind the Shlosh Meir Shekel. So says the Chizkuni, Rokeach, and others. Let's move towards the end of the parsha, just for our concluding section here. And that is when Yaakov himself is on his way down to Mitzrayim. And what do we see? In Perek Mem Vav, Pasuk Gimel. And as the opening psukim of Perek Mem Vav tell us, Yaakov doesn't just travel to Mitzrayim. He stops off at Be'er Sheva and he offers korbanos. He wants to commune with HaKadosh Baruch Hu when he's on his way down from Eretz Canaan to Eretz Mitzrayim. And Hashem appears to him and speaks to him and says, Pasuk Gimel, Vayomer Anochi Akel Elokei Avicha, I am the God of your father. Al tira me'edar Mitzrayim, do not be afraid of going down to Mitzrayim. Ki legoi gadol asimcha sham. I'll make you into a great nation there. Then it says, Anochi eredimcha Mitzrayim, I'll go down with you to Mitzrayim. Vanochi alcha gam alo, and I will surely bring you up again.
What's the background
to the fear? Hashem says to Yaakov, don't fear going down to Mitzrayim. What does Yaakov fear? And what's being allayed here? And how is it being allayed? The phrase in Pasuk Dalet is interesting. The double-barreled expression. Hashem says, I'll go down with you. Banuchi al-chogam alo. Which is has like two expressions of coming up. I'll bring you up and bring you up. Banuchi gam alo, I'll bring you up and come up. So what's behind that double phraseology? Says the Beis HaLevi, Yaakov's fears are well understood. He understands that the time has gone to go down to Mitzrayim. Everyone understands that at a certain point, the Bris Ben HaBesorim, which they all know about, is going to escalate. And he understands that he is going to meet the next level of the Bris Ben HaBesorim. And that's where the fear is. Because in such a society, in such an atmosphere, there is the fear that the Jewish people might very simply dissolve. And going back to to the earlier part of our discussion this evening, they very nearly did. So it's all very well to say your descendants shall be whatever they are for 400 years. What if they don't make 400 years? So it's meant to be refining them, but it could simply demolish them. What about that? Yaakov's fear is they may go down to Mitzrayim and may never come up. They may just disappear. They may just disintegrate into the fabric of Egyptian society and lose all sense of distinction or destiny or identity or anything. What is the safeguard against that? Says the Beis HaLevi, there's 2 points here. Firstly, this is what's behind Hashem saying, A'alcha gam alo. Alcha means I'll bring you up. The gam alo sounds like there's another coming up. But how many are there? What's reflected here are two options for leaving Mitzrayim. I'm going to go down with you, and that's how it's going to start. And then we're going to come up. The question is when? It depends. If the Jewish people go the distance and retain themselves intact, so then that's Alcha, will come up again. But Gamalo, there's almost like another Exodus clause in the Pasuk. They'll leave, in time being, if relevant, and if not, Gamalo. I'll also provide for another coming up from Egypt, and even if it's before the time. The Jewish people will not be allowed to be left here until they disintegrate. And what's interesting is, according to the Medrash, which we saw earlier, that's exactly what happened. In other words, 210 years in, they're at the brink of disintegration, and if you wait for the 400 years, so the good news will be the 400 years are up. The bad news will be there's no Jewish people anymore. And therefore, Gam Alo, this second exit clause, was actually activated to bring them up. So that's how Kadosh Baruch was saying to Yaakov, Al Tira, don't fear the unknown, because come what may, they will come up, either Bisman or not Bisman, which almost for us is Bi'ita Achishena, the time, at the appointed time, or if need be, before that time. But there is a further point, and with this we'll conclude. How does Hashem guarantee to Yaakov that the Jewish people will never be allowed to just disappear in Mitzrayim? He says, when they go down, I'm going down with them. I am going down with you to Mitzrayim. And what does it mean for Hashem to go down to Mitzrayim? What it means is Hashem at this stage is cementing the fact that he has sealed himself to the destiny of the Jewish people. When they go down, he goes down. He doesn't come up until they come up. And what that means is, in world history and world experience, people's awareness of Hashem comes through the experiences of the Jewish people. In other words, Hashem has funneled appearance and presence in the world to the well-being of the Jewish people. And when they're doing well, so people say, oh, the God of Israel is here. And when not, he's not anywhere else, and maybe people don't know where he is. That's the concept of the divine presence in Golus, Shechinta Begalusa. When the Jewish people are in exile, Hashem is in exile, because you don't hear from him. Because you only ever hear from him when the Jewish people are doing well, and that's the only way to account for their success. Not just their survival, but their success. And that's why Hashem says, you can be rest assured the Jewish people will come out, because I'm not going to stay there. and I'm only going to come out when they come out. Vanochi, I'm going to go down with you. Vanochi alcha gam alo, and I'll bring you up, and I'll come up with you. So as surely as I'm not going to let my name wallow there indefinitely or permanently, so I'm not going to let the Jewish people, because the two are tied together. And of course, awareness of Hashem as creator of the world is necessary for the world, so that is the absolute. And therefore, the Jewish people are vouchsafed their ultimate survival and success because they are the vehicle through which HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes himself known to the world. There is a classic comment of Rabbeinu Yonah. It's quoted in Talmidei Rabbeinu Yonah on Maseches Brachos within the context of Kiddush Levana, actually. He quotes a pasuk in Sefer Yeshaya, well-known pasuk, at least the beginning. Achein ata kel mistater. Indeed, you are a hidden God. That's the first part of the pasuk. Deus absconditus. Elokei Yisrael Moshiach, the God of Israel saves. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, how are these two connected to each other? What's the flow of the pasuk? Achein ata kel mistater means, for the most part, Hashem really is hidden in the world. You don't hear from him that often, not in a manifest or direct way. But when do you hear from him? When he saves the Jewish people. That's how you hear from him. Elokei Yisrael Moshiach. HaKadosh Baruch Hu saves the Jewish people, and then people know. Anyone who's prepared to listen, that they'll hear it then. And I think these are things of, you know, the more Jewish history goes on, the more it marches towards it's a culmination and full realization. We already have seen that people hear from HaKadosh Baruch Hu with the stunning and defying all odds success of the Jewish people. Kel Mistater was in the world. Elokei Yisrael, Moshiach. That was promised to Yaakov Avinu when he goes down to Mitzrayim. It's promised for the Jewish people at all times. We should see its realization soon with Meher B'Yamin.